This is WJBC This Week.
We were, frankly, very surprised that they had made the decision to move. And again, we didn't know a thing about it.
We don't want to be poaching from each other.
I'm just disappointed in their decision.
The reasons for the removal are due to his performance not meeting expectations.
No one likes the 7:15 start time. And most people do not like a late end time.
I'm pretty humbled by it, to be honest with you.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, Bloomington's mayor details the city's work in plugging a multi-million dollar deficit, while Normal's city manager expresses frustration over how Kroger decided to move its grocery store south to Bloomington. A Supreme Court scholar weighs in on Republican attempts to block any nomination to the court by President Obama. A political expert shares the results of a presidential poll in Illinois. Plus, a longtime drama teacher prepares to take her final bow. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. 9 months after a city-appointed task force outlined a menu of options to close a multi-million dollar deficit, Bloomington city officials have proudly proclaimed mission accomplished. In fact, the budget presented this week marks an 11% increase of spending, or $20 million, over the current budget. Mayor Terry Renner explained how the city got from point A to point B when he talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Colleen Reynolds this week.
You put together this committee to a task force to look at ways to cut spending. And they said to me, that is nothing but a ruse, that they're just doing that to make the to give the appearance that they want to cut. And I said, well, we'll just wait and see. And here you go. We've got the proposed budget is going up by $20 million, and it's balanced. And I said, well, it's balanced. And they said, yes, it's because they're taxing us to death. And then they started listing the taxes, the 1% sales tax, the gasoline tax, the entertainment tax or whatever. And I was like, okay, well, I really can't defend you anymore. So...
Well, let me go ahead and start for several reasons. First of all, several of the things that you've said are actually inaccurate. There are cuts across the board in this budget and overtime and commodities and contractuals. The second thing is some of the taxes you're talking about. We had no tax increases last year, even though our costs went up 2%. 2 years ago, the combination of taxes were about 2%, which was our increase in cost. The bottom line is no mayor can promise you and deliver free lunches. There's this thing called inflation, and we're always looking for cost efficiencies. That's certainly the case. The other thing is the budget task force was not charged to only look at cut. They were charged to help find different ways to balance our budget on the cut side, on basically issuing, having people who like liquor license fees or people downtown where we have a higher back. The taxpayers are bearing all the costs. Those cost increases, should bar owners pay more for liquor licenses, or should we raise the green fees, the golf courses, as well as tax revenues. So it was supposed to look at a balanced budget. Frankly, I am very proud of what we've done. In fact, the biggest surprise I've had when I was elected mayor was I thought we were in better financial shape. I didn't realize how bad it was. We've got our fiscal house in order, and we're still working on it. A lot of the things the budget task force did, we are still working on, including golf courses. Do we privatize them? Do we raise green fees? So there are a lot of things all across the board. So at the end of the day, we're now in a very strong financial position. There are many other things that we're looking at, obviously, just like the golf courses. And we'll see whether or not we can continue to take advantage of efficiencies. But we now have a budget that is projected, even if there's not growth in the economy, to be balanced for the next 3 to 4 years. We have our fiscal house in order, and we did it with a combination of strategies. Now, some of the things that you're talking about in terms of a budget increase, some of that money is because we are raising money for the county for mental health, about $2.5 million. So that money passes through us. It also includes nearly $10 million in street resurfacing and capital projects. So those are things that you can't wave a magic wand and pave streets. That costs money, right? There, again, at the end of the day, there are no free lunches. Mostly, the things that you've mentioned are not what I hear on the street. Mostly people are happy that we've got our financial house in order, unlike the state of Illinois or unlike the federal government. We have the second highest bond rating you can get. It may very well be that we get the highest bond rating now that we are, you know, we're financially stable.
Can I ask you a little bit about, there is money that was designated for the BN Advantage.
Correct.
And it was a sizable amount. I think it was...
Correct.
What?
I believe it's just about $400,000.
Right.
That's basically for economic development. I didn't know we were going to be able to afford that at the end of the day, to be honest. Because at the end of the day, we have to provide our police, 911 service, fire, public works. Economic development is very, very important, right? But if we have to, you know, fight to keep the doors open, that's not something I was 100% sure we could do at the end of the day.
So how
it
will
turned
that
out that we did?
How
so
will that be spent? Sorry. How will that go toward a salary for a director of that effort? Because I know there is
that's
a discussion of that.
We do have a director, and that is Kyle Hamm from the Economic Development Council. So again, the BN Advantage is a joint venture by the Town of Normal, the City of Bloomington, McLean County, the Economic Development Council, to do what we can to grow our economy in the 21st century. And we know we're succeeding. Just a few months ago, Google basically went through the 50 states and they named digital capitals, not necessarily the political capital of each of the states. Bloomington was the digital capital of Illinois. So we are doing a great job in the international political economy, and we've got to continue to market ourselves and to grow. And
okay.
So that's why this is very, very important.
And we have discussed BN Advantage quite a bit on our airwaves. I was under the impression that there was going to be a separate individual that would be hired to make sure that this wide-ranging initiative that has a lot of moving parts, you know, continues to move forward and is managed.
Right. Yeah. And that may very well be the case. What the Town of Normal, City of Bloomington, and McLean County are doing are stepping up to the plate to give some money to this broader goal, you know, the BN Advantage program. This is initially a chamber and EDC initiative that seemed to have almost universal support.
So where did that figure come from, though, that Bloomington will be giving, and do we have an idea of how it will be spent?
Ultimately, we know at 500 feet what we want to accomplish, but the City of Bloomington, the Town of Normal, and the county have representatives on the Economic Development Council. Alderman Jim Fruin is my appointee to the EDC, and so we'll also be at the table for deciding that. So that essentially, we've made a decision at 500 feet, and that decision on the ground is going to be made by our appointees.
You said there was a formula. What is the formula?
There's a typical formula, and it's by formula. It does vary. We have, you know, hundreds of intergovernmental agreements, but when the Town of Normal and the City of Bloomington are involved in something jointly, usually it's based on a proportion of our population. So Bloomington usually pays about 60% and Normal about 40%. That's a fairly common metric, as you'll see amongst most of our intergovernmental agreements. And that was the case here in BN Advantage. That was the case for Connect Transit. Those are fairly, you know, clear formulas. There are other kinds of things, like Bloomington basically licenses the vehicles for hire, Uber and whatever, for both cities by intergovernmental agreement. So we make the decision and monitor that for both Bloomington and Normal. So there are things like that. But if there's a cost, it tends to be that 60-40 formula.
So some of the other areas that you mentioned earlier, that so they're still under review, fee increases, other potential maybe streamlining or cuts, but will those come after the budget is approved?
Well, some of them may. What I'm hoping to do, and I have to talk to the city manager again about this. This is our goal, is to try to get all of that to happen by the time we vote on the budget in April. And so what we may not have, if we go forward with the golf courses, which is another if, I'm not convinced at all that we're going to save a nickel with the golf courses, and that's a topic for yet another day. I think we should just raise the green fees a few dollars and just move on. But we're also going to be looking at combining the BCPA and Coliseum booking. We're in the process of renegotiating the contract with the Coliseum, and that is something that we could conceivably save up to $200,000 a year. Now, if that happens, it may not happen by the time, of course, you know, we have the budget done. But once that happens, if we have extra revenue, we will put it into our savings, because we have about a 15% reserve, which is what our policy says. We're slightly under that. It's like 14.9 or so. So with the $200,000, if we were able to save that in the next year, we would put that into reserves to make sure that we hit our 15%. And then obviously next year, we just factor that in as we're trying to prioritize the budget.
That was Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner with Scott and Colleen. Normal's city manager says he was disappointed that the town wasn't given the opportunity to keep one of its largest grocery stores in Normal. Bloomington announced this week it had approved a $2.5 million sales tax rebate for Kroger to move its recently remodeled College Avenue store into a bigger store on the other side of College Avenue in Bloomington. Normal City Manager Mark Peterson talked with WJBC's Dan Swaney this week.
The announcement here in the last week or so that the Kroger store on College is pulling up stakes and moving to the other side of College and into the city of Bloomington caught an awful lot of people by surprise.
Me included.
Yeah.
I received a telephone call from my counterpart about 2 weeks ago. Just say, hey, just so you know, we've been talking with Kroger, and they're going to be moving over across from Meijer. They're going to provide some sales tax incentives to help that project go forward. But it did completely surprise me, because I know for a fact that's a very good producing Kroger grocery store. Of course, been there a long time. 2 years ago, they just made a major investment in that store, did a remodel, put in the gas station, did some parking lot work. And so we were, frankly, very surprised that they had made the decision to move. And again, we didn't know a thing about it. So, yeah, disappointing, but those things happen, and we've got to move on. And we'd like to talk to the Kroger officials about what they plan to do with that property. They do own it. I've read in the newspaper they're hoping to find a buyer or a tenant. But we have not spoken with them. I've left some messages with our real estate people, and so far have not received a return call. But we hope to make contact with them in the near future.
It's disappointing on a couple levels, I would guess, that first of all, here's a store that has been a real anchor to that part of Normal for a lot of years. As you and I were talking, a lot of people can walk to that grocery store.
Right.
They're not going to be able to do that now.
Yeah.
But the third and probably most important thing is the loss of sales tax revenue. Mm-hmm. What kind of hit is this going to be for Normal?
It's a big hit. I'm not really at liberty to tell you how much. We have access to that data. We were given that by the state of Illinois, so I know exactly how much sales tax that store generates. And I can tell you, as grocery stores go, it's one of the better ones in town. They do a great business. I think there's a lot of loyalty to Kroger in that location. You mentioned there's a lot of people who walk to that store. And I'm not saying they can't walk to the new location. It's across Veterans Park, but it's a lot more challenging. So, yeah, we're disappointed they're leaving. The good news is they're staying in the community. They're investing. They're going to build a nice big store, so there'll be some, you know, construction workers that'll have some opportunity to build that. I'm assuming they'll add employment because it's a bigger footprint. So that's good news. But we're certainly disappointed that they're leaving our community, but at least they're staying in McLean County.
The new store location is going to be, for all intents and purposes, across College Avenue from Meijer.
Directly across,
yeah.
Is my understanding, yes.
That's another thing that I have to wonder, and perhaps you already have too. What kind of incentive would it take to move a store from that location after they've just invested a lot of money to make it better, to build a gas station? How do you feel about what Bloomington must have given up to make that happen?
Well, I know exactly what they gave up because they shared that with me. And I wouldn't say it's an extraordinary incentive package. It would, not out of line. It's about 10% of their total investment. I don't know if that was a make-or-break deal with Kroger. My guess is they probably made the decision to move and build a bigger store before they sat down with the city and said, we need some help, and the city was willing to do that. And I don't fault the city for trying to help them out. And it's certainly a gain for the city of Bloomington in terms of sales tax, and it's a loss to us. But, hey, the good news is you've got a retailer that wants to expand and wants to invest. And unfortunately, I wish they'd have done it on our side of the boundary line, but you can't fault them for wanting to expand their operation here. So, people have asked me, is this poaching a business? I don't think so. I don't believe that Bloomington went to Kroger. I think Kroger went to the city of Bloomington, said we need some help. And again, I did get a call before this became public from my counterpart letting me know that they were, you know, that they'd reached some sort of an agreement. I wish Kroger let us know a little early to see if there's something that we could have done to help make them stay at their current location or find a location normal, but they didn't give us that opportunity, so we'll move on.
And there is a little bit of history of businesses moving from Bloomington to Normal to Bloomington, big sure, businesses, and sure. I think of Extreme Motors, for example.
Yes.
That was a huge move.
Hyundai, Extreme Hyundai moved a few years ago. We had a vacant Saturn dealership, and Dan O'Brien was looking to split. Kia and Hyundai were together, and I think for a variety of reasons, he needed to split those up into their own dealership, so he saw this as an opportunity to come into Normal to take over the Saturn dealership, and there needed to be some improvements made to that facility. So we helped him out with some sales tax. Again, shared that with Bloomington. At that time, the city reacted a little negatively to that. They got their feelings hurt. So we backed off and said, we'll give you an opportunity to talk with Dan and see if you can work something out in Bloomington. They weren't able to because they didn't have a facility that was like the Saturn they could move into fairly easily. So he ended up coming to Normal. But, you know, that has happened and it will happen. The one thing that we need to avoid is we don't want to get into a situation where we have a retailer that's playing the two cities off against one another. We don't want to get into a bidding war, and I don't think that's going to happen. And we also, I think, need to communicate with each other. If we're talking to a business in Bloomington, I'm going to pick up the phone and call Mr. Hales and tell him, hey, just so you know, we've been approached. We're talking with them, and I expect that they'll do the same if that situation's reversed.
That was Normal City Manager Mark Peterson with Dan Swaney. The national front runners in the race for president are also leading in Illinois, about 2 weeks ahead of this state's primary. Donald Trump leads the race by 13 points among Republicans in Illinois, and Hillary Clinton up 19 points on the Democratic side. Professor Charlie Leonard with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University reviewed the numbers with WJBC's Joe Ragusa this week.
First, with the Republican side, Donald Trump, what was your largest takeaway with his numbers compared to the rest of the field?
Well, I wondered if moderate Republican Illinois might be the place that might slow Trump down, and at first glance, his pretty large lead over everyone else makes me rethink that, particularly since second place goes to Ted Cruz, who doesn't fit our idea of an Illinois moderate Republican either. The second thing that strikes me is that, on the other hand, Trump didn't break 30%. Among Illinois Republicans, and he's been polling in the low to mid-30s other places. So perhaps if by the time the March primary rolls around, a few more people have dropped out, maybe Donald Trump might not win Illinois.
Now, this poll was taken when Jeb Bush was still a candidate. He received 8%, and there's also another 15% who were undecided, and that's still a large number of unknown votes.
That's correct. You add Bush's 8% to the undecided, and if somebody else drops out, there will certainly be some shifting going on in the minds of Illinois Republican primary voters between now and the March primary.
And one thing I did notice is that obviously Chicago and the suburbs have different political philosophies compared to downstate Illinois, but those differences didn't really show up in any of the numbers for Trump. He was number one guy across the board. What do you make of that?
Well, Trump has been doing well in areas that look like downstate Illinois, and he's been doing well in the suburbs. I wonder if a lot of those people are folks who did not participate in primaries much in the past, and somebody like Trump sort of wakes them out of their indifference.
And now what about the Democratic side? Hillary Clinton has a 19-point lead over Bernie Sanders. Would you call that a comfortable lead?
I would say 51 to 32 looks comfortable until you think about two things. One is this is her home state, her native state. And two, there are still 16% undecided. So it's not, I wouldn't bet on Bernie Sanders beating her or even tying her in Illinois. But if I were working for Hillary Clinton's campaign, I would say to you, the journalist, that I was very happy with that 51-32 lead. And then when you were gone, I'd turn to my colleagues and say, why in the heck aren't we up more than 19 points over this guy?
And these numbers don't really look much different than the national poll numbers, at least in regards to age. Bernie Sanders has a large lead among younger voters, but Hillary is more liked with the older crowd. Is there any real surprise there?
No. Pollsters are always happy when our numbers look like those of other polls around the country. A big swing in preference for Bernie Sanders among the under 35 crowd. But then it evens out, and as the voters get older, presumably they're more familiar with Hillary Clinton. She's been in our politics a long time. And that's a pretty comfortable lead among the older folks for Clinton over Sanders. And those are the folks who are more likely to turn out than the under 35s are, particularly in a primary election.
That was Charlie Leonard of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute with Joe Ragusa. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said this week he won't take any action on confirming a Supreme Court nominee if President Obama nominates someone to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia. Illinois State University Supreme Court scholar Megan Leonard weighed in on the Supreme Court fight with WJBC's Terry James this week.
Is this anything new as far as an election year appointment and how the Republicans or the opposite party is reacting?
It is new. It's unprecedented because he said not only will they not vote, but they won't hold any hearings on the president's nominee. Now, the reason this whole situation is so unprecedented is because usually Supreme Court justices don't die in office. They usually resign, and they retire when a president of their political persuasion is in office. And so most of the time, presidents are replacing somebody of the same ideology. The difference here is that Scalia, being a strong conservative, unexpectedly died and will be replaced by a liberal president. So that's really where the unprecedented nature of this comes in. And for the Senate Republicans to say no hearings, no votes, that's way outside of anything we've seen historically.
And the one thing I find interesting is that it's not as if the president is on his last 50 days in office. He still has 300 days left. So there's a lot of time where we would go without a Supreme Court justice at least making things so they weren't even so that we could prevent a tie.
Exactly. So every case that the court hasn't decided on this term, and any case between October and January or even longer next term could be an eight-vote case, which could leave lots of 4-4 decisions and lots of really important questions that are still unanswered, not just questions on abortion or affirmative action, but questions on who gets to vote in elections and how we count the number of people who shall participate in elections. So really important issues. counties that are almost certain to remain undecided while we have an eight-person court.
Very curious about this. If the president were to get his appointment through, which seems unlikely right now, would the hearings have already been held? They've already made the arguments in front of the court with Scalia there. So what happens now if someone else is put on the Supreme Court? They were not there with the benefit of hearing both sides.
So they would participate in any cases that had not been heard yet. So any cases that Justice Scalia had heard, probably they would not vote on those cases. Or what the court could do is have those cases reheard in the next term. So they would essentially stop that case in its tracks and then schedule it for a second oral argument on next term, starting in October's schedule.
Of course, the president has been looking at some folks that are moderates to put on the court in hopes of getting Republican support. But this is really, it just boils down to party politics, because they don't seem to care who the appointment is or even knowing who he's interested in. They just don't want to confirm.
Exactly. And they think that it's the 2016 election and not the 2012 election that should speak to who should sit on the court in the future. So depending on where you view that, and certainly they're taking a risk here. They're risking the possibility of a Republican president against the possibility of a Democratic president against the current president.
Is there any sort of rule that says a president has to appoint someone to the Supreme Court when someone is off the court within a certain number of days?
There is absolutely no rule. Generally, though, the presidents do work fast. Most of the time, justices will wait and step down in June when a term is over, and then the seat is filled for the October beginning of the next term. But there's no time limit on any of this, no.
Besides negotiations with the Republican leadership, is there anything that President Obama could do to have his nominee voted on?
It seems unlikely. Certainly he can nominate somebody moderate. He's not going to nominate a conservative. There's no reason for him to give in to the Republicans that much. He can beg. He could make it an issue in the presidential election and hope that the public sees this as a referendum on the two parties. But for the most part, no. If the Republicans do not want to schedule hearings and don't want to vote, then the process will end until they go ahead and do that.
I mean, this all seems like I don't want to play. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home, doesn't it?
Certainly some people see it that way. And I think a lot of people, I think the Democrats would do well to spin it that way, that this is an obstructionist move by an obstructionist party. Politically, that might seem to help the Democrats. In fact, our Senator Mark Kirk has decided that he's willing to play. He's willing to take a vote because he politically probably benefits from playing with the Democrats.
Well, you take a look at the court, and it has historically, for many decades even, leaned conservative. Is that right?
That is very true. Certainly the last liberal chief justice is probably, we're talking back to the 1950s and 1960s with Chief Justice Warren, and the Warren Court in the 60s really being the last strong liberal, consistently liberal court. Since then, we've had a string of Republican presidents who've been successful at appointing conservatives to the court.
But really, I think, as we were discussing earlier, it is quite a gamble for the Republicans, because if the Democrats do win the presidential election, they're going to be quick to hold appointments for the Supreme Court justice that the new president would appoint.
Yes, yeah, certainly the new president is going to have some words to be able to give back to the Republicans should a Democrat win. Hey, you said the next president should appoint, and here I am. Now, the Republicans also have to be careful that they don't lose the Senate along with losing or having the Democrats maintain the presidency. So there is still the worst possible outcome for the Republicans, where the Democrats take back the Senate, maintain the presidency, and then we have a much more liberal justice on the court than we would get at a current Obama appointment.
That was ISU legal scholar Megan Leonard with Terry James. Bloomington High School is preparing for its production of Legally Blonde, March 10th through the 12th. It'll mark the final production for Susan Cortese in her 23rd and final year as drama teacher at BHS. She talked with WJBC's Dan Sweeney and Colleen Reynolds this week.
It really is the kind of extracurricular activity, I think, that can be life-changing for a student. I think a lot of theater students are some of those students who need to find their people, and a lot of times they find their people in the drama club or in theater, and it can really help improve their confidence and change them, I think, as people. That has to be great for you to have experienced.
Well, thank you, Colleen. It certainly is. It's one of the things that I think connects kids to school. It's the hook that gets them there and gets them excited about all the other things they're doing there. Theater is one of those events or activities at school that they have to use their math when they get there. They have to use their history in researching the play. They have to know their technology and their science, because we're not just doing a story, but we're putting on a technical, very involved electronic show often. And it gets kids there and utilizing some of the things that they're learning. I have a lot of students who are the top of the class come in because it's a place where they can relax and express themselves and have fun during the day, because they have such intense studies. And it's a great program for them to just kind of relax and enjoy all the things they know in life and share them.
What are some of the, you know, great memories that you have over the years? Or I know this is probably a very unfair question, but are there productions that you've done that just stay with you because for whatever reason you had an unbelievably talented group of students?
Well, one that stands out in my mind is a show called King and I, and I did it very early here in Bloomington. It was the moment when I think the program came together for me, where every student on that stage was dedicated and devoted to what we were doing, and we now had a family and an agenda and a goal set in mind, and it was really magical. I have a lot of those kids that performed in that play. I have a girl who runs her own music studio where she develops talent in Texas and has had students come out of that studio. She herself has done a few things. She was on one of the programs early, I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was like The Voice or something like that, and she was one of the top 12, and from that she went out and developed her own studio. And I have a young girl who's out in Los Angeles now who performs at area clubs there, singing and doing all kinds of things. And those kids stand out in my mind because they were my first group that were my kids there. But I've had other really phenomenal moments. I think about, you know, our big shows like Thoroughly Modern Millie, and the little girl that was in that who is now my vocal director for the show. In between shows, she's going out and performing this summer back in Montana. And I think of my kids in Hairspray in the moment where they felt connected to the story and the material, because it was so what we kind of fight for at Bloomington, of equality and getting together and being a group of people together. And I guess the moments for me that stand out the most, too, are me standing in the back of the auditorium and watching when the curtain call happens and watching the expression of their faces of the satisfaction of they did the best they could do.
And students do really blossom, I think, sometimes with theater and by being involved in theater, because in some ways, like you said, they find a way to express themselves or they find their voice, and I think it really helps build confidence, especially with students who might not be the popular student or with the in crowd.
I've had a lot of teachers come up to me and say, I never knew that that student even had that kind of talent within them. I had the band director, one of his major band people, he said, I didn't even know that girl could sing. I said, well, you know, those come from all the things that you teach, and then we're able to bring it out of her and show what she can do on stage. And, you know, those are great moments when other people or their parents. I had a mom several years ago say to me, the father had not come to see the play yet. And she said he was on a trip. And she said, you are to get home right now. You have got to see what your son is doing.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, those are great moments for me when the parents and the community and the people realize the talents within the kids that we have there.
Yeah. What advice would you give some youngster who's thinking about getting into theater? Is there kind of a consistent advice that you like to share with the kids?
I always tell them, do what your heart tells you. You can listen to a lot of other people. Go out, study, get the background, but be really well versed in what you're doing and be good to work with. If you are good to work with and you are somebody that people like to work with, they'll find ways to get you more work, and you'll do well then. You have to believe in yourself first, because it's a tough business. A lot of no's happen at the hands of theater people.
And because of people like you standing behind kids that may be just a little bit afraid to jump off into the deep end, that's why they succeed. So give yourself some credit on that, too. That's wonderful.
That was retiring Bloomington High School drama teacher Susan Cortese with Dan and Colleen. The Weekend News is next. This WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. High school students in Unit 5 would be able to sleep in longer, but grade schoolers would have an earlier wake-up call under a new busing schedule the school board will consider. The district is looking to cut back on the number of buses to save $1.3 million per year. Superintendent Mark Daniel tells WJBC the plan recommended by a committee of parents and educators pushes back the start of high school to 8:25, while elementary schools would begin at 7:40.
7:40 more of an ideal time, and here's why. Because if you look at the dawn and dusk in our area, it will start becoming light by 7. So that's key.
Daniel says the plan would mean no student would have to be picked up before 7 in the morning. Currently, some high schoolers have to be at the bus stop by 6:20. The junior high would start at 8:40. More profits for State Farm in 2015. Spokesman Dave Phillips says the company's underwriting loss doubled from $939 million in 2014 to $2.1 billion last year. But it was still a good year for the insurance company.
We still ended up with a operating profit of $1.9 billion. So State Farm is still in a very good financial state and pretty well invested for the future.
And in his final year as CEO, Ed Rust earned $13.3 million, up from $12.9 million in 2014. Bloomington is hoping to spur economic growth with a new tax increment financing district that was approved this week. The TIF helps the city use future property tax revenue to pay off developments within the district. It includes several properties, including the Colonial Plaza Shopping Center and Tawanda Plaza Shopping Center. Economic Development Director Austin Grammer says the district also includes Bloomington High School and the junior high.
The city council can potentially partner with District 87 to fund eligible redevelopment project expenses, such things as new windows, new roofing, new HVAC, remodeling of auditoriums, remodeling of classrooms.
The goal is to raise property values within the district so there's more revenue to pay for the development. Despite overwhelming support for Police Chief Chris Lane, the Haworth Village Board voted 4-1 this week not to reconsider a decision made last week to fire Lane. WJBC's Adam Stasinski was there.
Lane, who was present at the meeting, had little comment after the vote.
I'm just disappointed in their decision.
Mayor Tonza Luca says part of the reason Lane was fired is he made false statements to the press and provided false information to Haworth's liability insurance carrier.
Each department head was responsible to answer his or her section of the questionnaire. The police section contained false information.
DeLuca says he cannot go into further details regarding the false information. Almost 500 residents had filled out an online petition supporting Lane's reinstatement. Adam Stasinski, WJBC and WJBC.com.
A woman from Normal has been ordered to serve a 364-day jail sentence on weekends after admitting to driving under the influence of marijuana in a crash that seriously injured a passenger. McLean County Judge Casey Costigan handed down the sentence for 31-year-old Brittany Evans, who crashed an SUV on I-55 near Towanda in September of 2013. Ivan Smith, a front seat passenger, suffered a traumatic brain injury and can no longer care for himself. The judge issued the weekend's only sentence so Evans can care for her children, one of whom suffered a stroke last year. Evans was also ordered to pay restitution, a total of $10,000, to Smith's family. And Benjamin Elementary School in Bloomington has a pair of national all-stars in its ranks. Physical education teachers Todd Delvo and Joe Myers have been named Project Fit America National All-Star Teachers of the Year. Delvo says he's humbled by the award. He adds Project Fit America is a great benefit because it allows students to set and meet goals.
Maybe you're having a down day and you're kind of by yourself. That happens at for any age, and there's a place you can go and build some self-esteem by yourself. You don't need anybody with you. You can just go do it, do the pole climb one time and maybe try it the second time and earn, finally get the second time, and you're building self-esteem.
And Myers adds she's a little overwhelmed and honored by the award. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. It's time to take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday night, the McLean County League of Women Voters will host a discussion on income inequality at the Normal Public Library. WJBC will host an Arch Madness preview show at Pub 2 in Normal with Illinois State men's basketball coach Dan Muller. Wednesday is Read Across America Day, as people from across the community will be guest readers at Twin Cities Schools. Also Wednesday, Unit 5 will present proposed changes to its schedule for all of its schools in a public meeting at Parkside Junior High School. Former McLean County Board Chairman Matt Sorensen has a court date in Chicago on Thursday in his federal wire fraud case, though he won't be required to attend. And on Friday, the Redbirds will play their first game in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament quarterfinals at Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. The championship game is next Sunday. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Stock.